This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman. Welcome to Night School, the show that explores key themes in history, the social sciences, and the humanities. We critically unpack theories, frameworks, and social phenomena the better to understand how society works. Each week, we discuss a classic text, theme, or an idea that we hope to shed light on the world around you. We're going to talk about being vegan and Malay in Malaysia. And joining us to do that is Diana Rahim. She is an analyst and a consultant with ERE Consulting Group, which offers sensible environmental solutions, though I know that you're not here representing your company. But it's good that our listeners know that you are actively working on environmental issues and that you have adopted a vegan lifestyle. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
So let's just start with some basics first. You are a vegan, and typically Malaysians often confuse or associate that with being vegetarian. So how would you first draw the distinction?
So being vegan is basically not consuming or buying animal products, which includes meat, fish, dairy, eggs, cheese, leather products, and all that you can think of.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entire lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
So I know vegans who are very careful the makeup they use or the shampoo they use to make sure that their everyday consumption and use of things do not have any traces of animal exploitation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And vegetarianism is really like a dietary approach.
Yeah,
to
it's more dietary,
right?
Yeah. Vegetarianism, they just focus on diet whereby they can still eat eggs and milk, but obviously no meat. So
how about your journey into veganism then? Did it start with the vegetarian experiment first? Because typically that's how it begins, right? People are quite daunted to think, well, if I take out all traces of animal products in my everyday life, my whole lifestyle has to change. So typically they start with, like, why don't I cut down with meat first and then gradually move? Or did you just go straight into veganism?
For me, I just went straight into veganism.
Oh, wow.
But of course, before that, I learned about what's it about and whether I will be making a right decision. And I did cut off meat, but I wasn't fully vegetarian. I was pescatarian at one point, vegetarian a bit here and there. But when I decided to become vegan, I was just full on 100%. That's when I just,
How long has that been?
It's been about 1 year and 8 months since October 2015.
And would you say that the experience has been positive overall?
Overall, it has been positive. I've seen and I felt improvement in my own body, my lifestyle, and my mind.
Yeah.
I become healthier. I feel healthier. And my decision-making process, my mind, it's like I feel that I'm thinking more clearly. So it has lots of benefits to myself mostly, but of course to the environment, the animals that I'm not contributing to. All those.
And
so,
the typical cynical response is that what difference does it make, right? You're just one person. There's a whole industry here that's supported by all these corporations and that's like expanding, doesn't care, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, if you just think about the amount of carbon footprint you reduce, right? Just from your dietary practices, right? And then you multiply that by every day that you do that, right? The every day that passes where you make those decisions to cut down on your footprint. In the long run, you see significant changes, right? It doesn't look like it because we tend to think of these as individual decisions. But as the awareness grows, you can just imagine in your mind that a change is possible. And the fact that, you know, more celebrities are being vegans, there's greater awareness of it in films and popular culture, you sense that, you know, a certain paradigm shift is happening more broadly. Like universities, right? I mean, veganism, I think for most people, the awareness began out of campus life.
Yeah, it can be kind of lonely being vegan. And you think that you're just one person doing everything. But actually, if you act upon it and you talk about it more with other people, then, yeah, like you said, the awareness will build up and more people will adopt this lifestyle and then change will be more apparent. But of course, you yourself, you are already contributing to so much positivity, so much change. So it's not a waste, I think.
So as I understand it, your awareness developed while you were a student in the UK, and that was where mm-hmm. you made the decision, right?
Yeah.
How was the transition then back here? Because in the West, there are infrastructures for it. Stores will have sections for vegan and vegetarian products. You have communities, cafes, you have forums, you have film festivals sometimes, right, around sustainable eating and stuff like that. But here, it hasn't matured to that level yet. So how's that adjustment been for you?
It's not that bad, mm-hmm. actually. It's just not as much or as impressive as in the UK. But what helped me here was the Malaysian vegan community. Mm-hmm. So I followed them on Instagram, on Facebook, and I talked to them. I went to the events that they have. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the more I talk to them, the more I feel that I can do this. Mm-hmm. It's okay being in Malaysia and being vegan as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So how do they get by then when they don't have these facilities, right? Do they mostly make their own stuff? So, say, for example, vegan products, right? Like vegan cosmetics or stuff like that. I mean, do those things exist here? Are they available? And, you know, describe the efforts that are undertaken by the community to make mm-hmm. that lifestyle easier.
Okay, so food-wise, it's quite simple. You just buy the ingredients in the groceries and you make your own self, or go to a vegetarian or vegan-friendly restaurant. For cosmetics, there are cruelty-free brands out mm-hmm. there. It might not be local in Malaysia, so I guess some of them actually buy products mm-hmm. online to be imported here. Mm-hmm. And I think if they're really into the zero waste mm-hmm. kind of concept, they would actually make their own cosmetics, make their own toothpaste.
Right.
That's the more higher level, I would say.
Yeah, and it's quite fun too when you think about it, because yeah. when I was studying, the community, part of the way that they bonded was in doing these things, you know, mm-hmm. not just going to the same restaurants, but also like learning from mm-hmm. each other on how to maintain these lifestyles,
yeah.
right?
And you also know yeah. like where the items come from, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. where your food comes from, where your toothpaste comes from. So.
Yeah. I'm interested in the thought process, right? Because for me, it took me about maybe, I don't know, 8 to 10 years before I finally decided I was going to try to be vegetarian. I'm trying to be vegan now after being vegetarian for 3 years. And of course, it's been difficult because our cuisine is so dairy heavy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you live a certain way where you're always busy, you have far less time to make your own products, you know? So I'm still stuck at the vegetarian stage. But it took me a long time to think about it, because it's always about whether it's feasible. It's not so much like whether it's ethical. I think most people have some inkling that factory farms are just terrible.
Yeah.
But it's about adopting that lifestyle. We have to change your mindset, so on and so forth, you know? So what was the thought process like for you? Like, what was the early sign of awareness that you got, and the point at which you started thinking about it seriously and then, mm-hmm. you know, planning that transition?
So I come from a science background, so I always look at the facts, and climate change is like a big issue right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of got me thinking, how am I, you know, impacting the earth, the environment?
Mm-hmm.
And the more I learn about it, the more I get to the point that it's not just recycling, saving electricity, it's also actually animal agriculture, mm-hmm. eating animals, that you're contributing to the impact.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought process started from there, the environmental aspect. And then I just realized that, what do I have to do with my life to make it meaningful,
mm-hmm.
I guess? I want to contribute something positive, not just to my life, but to other people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more I learn about agriculture and then veganism, and I learned about the ethical side of veganism,
mm-hmm.
which is also related to the animal agriculture, factory farmed animals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt a sense of empathy
mm-hmm.
towards that. Like, they are live beings too.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they put in cages
mm-hmm.
and then just for us to eat for
yeah.
our pleasure?
Yeah.
So, and they feel pain, we feel pain, so
yeah,
I can
yeah.
relate to them, I guess. So I just felt more empathy.
Yeah, so, I can relate to that, because for me, the decision was to not partake in more suffering. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
It's exactly.
not that this decision is that much of a breakthrough. I am just one person, and it isn't easy, right? Because in this context, the adjustments are constant. It's not that you can just be in vegan, vegetarian mode all the time, right? Because you enter into certain contexts, food is more meat heavy, certain things are not very animal friendly, but that's where you work, where your friends work, your family is, so on and so forth. But the fact that at the end of the day, I can think of it as, well, I'm contributing to less suffering, or I'm lessening my contribution to the suffering that's already there. And that somehow gives my conscience some kind of balance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there are two positions out of this, right? On one hand, some people say, no, we shouldn't eat animals at all.
Yeah.
But on the other, there is the school of thought. It's a bit more pragmatic in the sense that given the conditions there are today, the way that we relate and treat animals is just not feasible to eat animals. You know, so one is unconditional, saying that we shouldn't eat animals at all because we're murdering them. So meat is murder, so on and so forth, even in an agricultural farm setting, right? Even when it's not industrial farm, right? But then there are others that say, just given how meat is produced, then we shouldn't. So, I mean, which one do you lean more towards?
I feel that in this day and age, it's not necessary anymore for us to consume animal products. Mm-hmm. But it also depends on your lifestyle, your situation. If you live in a city where most of your food is imported and you can get food easily, not just like meat, but vegetables or vegetarian food, then you have no excuse really not to stop partaking in the cruelty or the suffering.
Yeah.
But if you are still living like in the villages, kampong area, or in the desert perhaps, where your livelihood depends on an animal or cattle, then that's fine by me. That's my personal opinion. So, yeah, it really depends on the situation.
The context,
The context.
And the other thing, too, is that there's just a simple, straightforward question of pleasure in the sense that it's not unlike cigarettes, right? When I became vegetarian, my immediate thing to do was to explain to people, but also share them links of like factory farms and the horror of climate change and stuff like that. And they're genuinely moved. They're like, oh my God, this is terrible, right? Yeah. We should do something about it. But I still want my steak. I still want my Kentucky Fried Chicken, right?
Yeah.
Even though they know how those drumsticks are produced, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's just that moment when your teeth lands into those flavors, right? And you're sent to another dimension and the horrors of the world suddenly becomes secondary, right? So it's hard in a sense that I get your scientific approach. I think there's a very robust logic behind it. But because this involves the way that our chemicals are wired for decades to like those things, it's very, very difficult, you know?
And it's not just from birth or from childhood that you're introduced. It's your family, your parents, your previous generations. The culture itself is...
And your friends. I mean, Malaysia has a makan culture. If everybody is born that way, they'll be enjoying their meat and you'll be left out. And there's that pressure, you know?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's difficult.
Yeah, even in workspaces, right? It's not unusual in Malaysia where during meetings, they'll be serving food. And sometimes the meetings can go on for a long time. You're just hungry, right? And it's a curry puff, chances are, which has meat in it, right? So what are you going to do, right? You're already hungry. The meeting's going to go on. And it's not just that we eat a lot here, but culturally, meat has taken this symbol of graciousness, of hospitality, that to refuse meat sometimes is to commit a kind of a cultural offense, right?
Yeah.
So what do? You could be the militant vegan that nags people about how terrible it is, or you could just be the nice passive Melayu who goes, thank you, auntie, right? So do you do?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because I've been in that kind of situation, work situation, where I have to meet clients and all that, and they serve kind of, you know, delicacy quiz, you know? And for me, I just say, no, thank you. And just eat what I can eat. There are options, there are quiz being served that I can actually eat.
Yeah.
Like ketayap, maybe?
Maybe, right?
Ketayap,
big maybe.
So, yeah, I just pick and choose what, you know, I can eat.
Yeah.
I can't enforce, you know, them to change, change the menu.
Exactly. You know, or, you know, when there's not that, you know, sometimes they serve teh tarik, right? Which has condensed milk in it. You know, just evil, if you ask me. But then if they don't have that, they have syrup, right? Which isn't much healthier either, right? So it's a very strange connection to sweetness we have here. But anyway, let's take a pause and we'll be right back after the break, where we talk more about being vegan in the Malay-Malaysian context. In the first part, we have a biographical sketch of our guest, Diana Rahim, the motivation behind her choices, and some of the broader picture themes that those things touch on. And we'll get into more specifics in the second part of the show. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman, and this is Night School on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahman. Joining us this week is Diana Rahim, an environmental analyst and consultant, and also a vegan. And we're discussing about the challenges of being a vegan in Malaysia, and particularly in the cultural context that we're in. And the first part of the show, we had a biographical introduction to her journey into this lifestyle, animal-free lifestyle, that is. And we're going to talk more about the culturally specific challenges that we come across. And what better way to do that than locating our discussion in the context of Raya, right? And one of the things that stand out, not just to me, but even visitors to this country who are trying to learn about the cultures here, and they're trying to observe the uniqueness of these different settings, and they're going to notice one thing, and that is the fact that Malay cuisine, as it is typically served, is very meat-heavy. Talking about four or five different types of meat at a given time. Now, that's fine, but the vegetarian options, or the vegetables on offer, right, even for non-vegetarians, are typically tokens, right? There's dry stuff there, ulam, and sometimes even the lontong will have meat in it, right?
Yeah, or ikan bilis.
Ikan bilis. You could just go with the ketupat and the kuah kacang, but then even the kuah kacang has belacan,
right?
Might have. Strong likelihood of it too. So what are your thoughts on that?
It is kind of disappointing as a vegan that I think that's our culture. I don't know what
else
to say.
Has it always been our culture though? That's what I'm wondering, right? Because I remember growing up thinking back to the times when our cuisine is described is always, you know, ubi is mentioned a lot, right? Kangkong is mentioned a lot, right? And you even see this in like LUT comics, right?
Yeah.
When meat is served, it's often a communal event, right? People are excited to have their chicken or their beef, mainly because they don't often eat it. It's not a daily thing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, the fact that we're so meat-centric in our food, if that's necessarily what we've always been about, right?
Yeah. It's a tough question, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
But
yeah.
I think we've grown used to the idea of meat being essential in our, you know, diet. Like you said, probably in those days, it's more of ubi and kailan or whatever.
Yeah. Because there were no factory farms then.
There was no factory farms, and
so
like,
the meat you had was from whatever farm animal you have.
Yeah, and
right?
It's luxury. It's only like presented in special events.
Mm-hmm.
I guess probably part of the reason our culture have become meat-centric is probably the factory farms and the influence of the fast food industries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's become cheaper.
Yeah.
Meat has become cheaper.
Yeah.
So,
and I wonder too if it's a sign of progress in a sense that because there was so much waiting and anticipation around meat before, right? The chicken has to be of the right size, has to accommodate enough people, it has to be enough to serve a family. So there's, you don't just grab the meat from the shelf. You wait, you relate to the animal, you're trying to always, you know, understand it as part of your context, right? It's a certain poignancy to it when you do sacrifice it, whereas now it's available, you can have it directly, and that is seen to be more of a privilege, of a luxury that we never had before, right? So now we prize it more. And so what do you do then in these contexts? Do you make your own food? I mean, what's the thought process as Raya approaches as a vegan? And you've probably had, what, two Rayas so far? Or is it the first Raya?
First Raya, actually.
First Raya. Yeah. So what was that like? First vegan Raya?
It was not too bad, I would say, because I prep my meals before balik kampung. And
what meals are those? Can you describe the menu for us?
It's tofu rendang. It's basically normal rendang.
That sounds delicious.
But you just put in tofu. And also my favorite sambal tempeh.
Yeah.
So it's really normal sambal.
That's become hipster now, by the way. Tempeh, right? Tempeh is very hipster these days. But sambal tempeh, not yet. So you can can set
exactly.
The trend there.
Yeah, tempeh is actually easy to get here.
That's true. Yeah.
But people don't
Good quality ones too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what I kind of like. My mom helped me when my mom cooked it.
Yeah.
We've just packed it in a mini cooler and went to Balik Kampung, yeah.
Yeah, and then the rest, like lemang and ketupat, you just blend it with that.
Yeah, just whatever my grandma prepares, lemang, ketupat, I just eat it with that. Yeah.
Now, how about the awkward conversation about, you know, what's veganism? Did that ever happen? Or
actually, people don't ask that sensitive questions. Mm-hmm. They would probably ask, oh, what's the difference vegan and vegetarian?
Right.
And, you know, what's in this food? Why tofu and whatnot? But they don't ask exactly, like, you know, what you are asking me today.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the deeper stuff.
Yeah.
But the most that they, you know, they remarked is that they did taste my rendang. And then they would, you know, show a face, like, weird kind of face. Yeah. Like, they're not used to it.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. And then some of them would say, meat is better.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
Or, I don't know, I can't live without meat,
yeah,
even after tasting this. Yeah. But,
I'll tell you when it does become a problem, though, when the whole question of hukum comes up, right? And I've had this a few times, right?
Okay.
What is the hukum of refusing to eat something that is halal and saying that I shouldn't?
Right.
Then it becomes a bit technical.
Yeah.
Right. Then you have to apply the contextual considerations.
Definitely,
right.
Yeah.
It's not just that. It's not a fact that this is a cow, but the fact of how the cow is produced. And then it becomes a discussion of the halal thing, which isn't the same discussion as what's sustainable. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the halal consideration is about the ethics of taking a life.
Yeah.
Right. And then you can really frame that discussion and make it such that factory farms are halal and people have done that, right? So, I mean, where do you stand on that issue?
Yeah, well, I would ask, like, looking at today's context where meat is so abundant, they get meat every day, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
How can the cattle, the animal, be raised in a halal way?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you have to let it graze in a grassland and then care for it, not just pack them in a factory farm or something like that. So I would question whether today's practices of animal agriculture is actually halal in that sense.
Yeah. And one of the interesting exchanges I had early on was actually precisely on that point. And it's good that you brought it up, the idea of the conditions that they live in. But then there's always this practical element that comes in, this cost-benefit consideration that says, yeah, but that quantity gives it scale. Scale makes it cheaper and poor people can now eat the meat.
Yeah.
Right. So they're going to justify in that direction in the sense that this is collateral damage to feed poor people. Then the question is, why should they eat meat necessarily for the nutrition, right?
Exactly.
Why not cauliflower or something? It's just as tasty,
yeah,
right? So that's sort of the conversation I get. And typically that's when, to me, the tensions happen, when religion somehow enters with the question of hukum and all that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And then one of the common phrases that meat eaters, I guess, and religious, you know, meat eaters would say is that some animals are created for us to consume. So that's a bit tricky to to discuss,
No, I get that a lot, right? Because this is why God created cows or something like that, right? And at that point, the question becomes, well, what else are cows for? And I was like, why should they be anything for us?
Yeah, why, anything,
why can't they just,
yeah,
like, you know, like, just live, like, cows be cows,
exactly,
right?
Like,
but they exist
yeah
for us, so they're just instruments for us.
I guess, yeah, that's where context comes in.
Yeah.
Like, in those olden days, you know, in the desert, it would be sensible probably to eat meat because there's no land to grow vegetables or fruits, whatever. But now, we can get vegetables easily and as easily as meat. So there's no reason for us to consume them anymore when looking at the fact now also that the production is not sustainable, basically.
Yeah. Do you find that awareness is growing among Muslims too, to be green, so to speak? I know Islam is already green, but this is a degree different kind of green, right? Do you think that's growing too?
I believe it's growing from what I've seen on social media. Not just like in Malaysia, but around the world as well. I've come across Instagram accounts of Muslims being vegan, you know, practicing a plant-based lifestyle. So it is slowly growing, the awareness, definitely.
Yeah.
We just need to talk about it more. Yeah.
And this is where Hamza Yusof is very interesting, because he's actually like explicitly pointing this problem out, you know?
Yeah.
Talking about food production, talking about what sugar does. And it's really not just about meat, right? Because if you think about it as an industry, Mm-hmm. It's really about where the sugar companies come in, where the corn lobby in the US comes in. It's all interconnected. The reason why we have very little control over the food we produce is because the means of production are owned by these corporations. Yeah, right? So he's actually very good in the sense that he frames this discussion in terms of not just what animals are for, which really, like you say, confines the discussion in a certain way, but he's looking at, well, what's the life that we want to live? What's the society that we want to be a part of?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So, yeah. So I'll tell you one thing good about being a vegetarian, vegan in Malaysia, though, in the sense that the cuisine that we have, even though we don't have the supermarkets or the discourse as they were in the West, the options that we do have in terms of cultural diversity is quite good. Mm-hmm. In the sense that there's vegetarian Chinese food, and typically you can request to make it vegan, they understand, typically, or Indian food. Even though it's dairy heavy, you can kind of make certain specifications. And of course, the Western stuff is available as well. Whereas in the West, typically the vegan vegetarian options are just white people food, right? So here, at least you have the range here, and then you have Thai vegetarian places as well, right? Yeah. So in that sense, I find that quite exciting that you can sample not just vegetarian foods, but of different kinds.
Exactly. Right? It's actually a positive thing to look at. Yeah. There's so many options, actually. Mm-hmm. And in terms of Malay food, we can experiment with it. Mm-hmm. We can create a different kind of cuisine. So it's an opportunity for chefs, you know, aspiring chefs or whoever, to actually come up with a new kind of dish. Mm-hmm. And that may, you know, become a new kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the other thing I like as well, and this is where vegetarians lack, in the sense that we're not quite there like vegans are, in the sense that vegans are bringing up bigger questions about our relationship to the world. Right. Mm-hmm. Vegetarians, again, is just about what's good diet. But vegans are saying, what's our relationship to nature like? How should we make that less damaging? Mm-hmm. You know, and that question, I feel that we're going to struggle with a lot more in our context, you know, because that relies on environmental awareness, it sounds to me. Mm-hmm. That you have to know that a lot of what we do is unsustainable. So if you look at the amount of meat that we produce, given that fisheries are depleting, given that factory farms are just so damaging, you have to think not just about what you put in your mouth, but what kind of relationship with nature you should have, right? Mm.
I think that's a really important knowledge and awareness that we should have right now, especially in, you know, following the Paris Agreement, the climate change issues. We're all in this together. We're not just like, oh, just Malaysia. We mind our own business, but it's a relationship with the earth, and the earth is, you know, continuous with other countries as well. Mm-hmm. So I think in Malaysia, it is slowly growing. The idea is slowly growing because I think the government is putting the idea of sustainable consumption and production. Mm-hmm. So that would help probably increase the awareness among especially students. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, education starts.
Yeah. I guess you're in a very interesting position. I would say even advantageous in the sense that your interests overlaps with your work, right? Mm, in a lot of ways. So being in environmental consultation, do you see that there are reasons to be optimistic that people are more getting more aware, governments are becoming more sensitive to this issue, that they're going to need information, insights and advice on the environment?
I think you have to be optimistic. You have to push the governments, push the people to be aware of this issue. And I think they are more receptive to this topic. It just takes time, I guess, because we're so unused to the idea of conservation, for example, or sustainability.
Yeah.
But I guess if we see the impact more and more, if, you know, the impacts are like touching on our lives, then probably, hopefully, you know, we can solve this issue.
Yeah. And that's the thing with me in the sense that I get torn every day between that, this moments of hope, right? When I meet people like you, young people who are aware, who are taking it upon themselves to change their lifestyle. On the other hand, you know, knowing that, that you have this community that, you know, there are not many Malay vegans, but it's growing, right? You say that it could be, you can count at most with two hands, like how many Malay vegans there are. But at least it's growing, right?
Yeah,
maybe you
is.
Need three hands by next year. But at the same time, you know that Malaysia is one of the hub for animal trafficking, right? It's one of the worst in the world.
Yes.
Right. So it's just this tug of war of contradictions every day between, on one hand, really inspiring moments of promise, and on the other hand, like reasons to just despair, you know? So how do you manage that? Because I think the psychological attitude to that process is very important, right? Because you don't want to lose heart.
Exactly,
right? Life's short, right?
Yeah.
And you want a clear conscience and you want to believe. So what gives you that strength to kind of carry on?
I think it's the sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
Just having the right type of people around you to motivate you to go on with your journey.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just looking at the reality of it. But you always have to find reasons to go on. You always have to see what improvements there have been so that it can support your own work as well. So, yeah, basically just that.
Yeah, and I think that's very important about environmental awareness as well, where you need others.
Yeah.
Right? It's not this thing where you can kind of just do on your own, right? So it's not that kind of interest where you can have, like, it's not a personal hobby. It's really like your relationship to the world, like you mentioned earlier. And this is where vegans sometimes might not be treading the line in the way that is most effective, in the sense that, you know, if you surf the web and you like memes, like I do, there's a lot of these memes about militant vegans.
Yeah.
You know, like vegans are very preachy, vegans are very judgy, and, you know, maybe not in Malaysia, not yet, unfortunately. I think I wish there were more judgy vegans out there, but in the West, where it's become so mainstream, they feel a bit more cultural power, right? They can make these demands on people to adopt a better lifestyle. So there is that stereotype of the militant vegan, which I understand wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Right. But we tend to get very apocalyptic. The subtext typically is, if you don't change your life, the world will end much, much sooner.
Mm-hmm.
It has a religious undertone, right? In the sense that, you know, that the world ending and our everyday ethics are very closely tied. But veganism based itself more on science, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the packaging of the message has to be more effective, and given our context, we have to localize it a lot more.
Yeah. So you can't blame the preachy vegans because they're angry at how the world is like. And you just have to... Well, this whole vegan concept, it's basically... It centers around compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want to protect the lives of the innocent, the voiceless.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yes, there are people who go about it the very harsh way, but I don't think there are a lot of people going about that way. But the most effective way is peaceful activism and all that. So it's an important topic to talk about because it's urgent. Climate change won't stop until, you know, you've done the right thing. You don't go business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take the action immediately, if possible.
Yeah. So, and on that note, we'll have to wrap up. But before we do, what would you like to plug? Maybe is there a website? Is there like a book that you would recommend? Anything like that?
Well, there's a MalaysianVegan.com website where you can find restaurants here in KL and in other parts of Malaysia that are vegan friendly. And Facebook page, there's also the Malaysian Vegan Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. It's just very active, very informative.
Very active,
actually,
yeah. And we have like lots of... We do like annual potluck events and other vegan day events. So
awesome. Well, thanks again for joining the show, Diana. Are you on Twitter by any chance or anything like that?
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram.
Okay, so what are your handles?
Spirit of Diana.
Spirit of Diana on both?
Yes, both.
Okay, awesome. So be sure to follow her. I mean, you're active and I think you're doing interesting stuff. I mean, that's how I got to know of your work, you know.
Thank you.
So hopefully that continues. Once again, you can email the show, bfmnightschool@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook. Just type Night School on the search space. Be sure to like it if you haven't yet. Download the BFM app too. You can find it on Google Play or the Apple App Store. So thanks again for joining the show, Diana.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. This is Night School on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.